Hi everyone, this is Adam Small.
And I'm Jake Moses.
Welcome to our podcast, The Performer's Pathway.
A podcast adventure to help guide and navigate your musical life and career.
As a prelude to every episode, we'd like to remind our listeners that this podcast is about the other side of the musical coin. One side, which you see a lot at our website, mymusicmasterclass.com, is what to do in the practice room. The other side is how to maximize your talent and skills in the real world, and that's what this podcast is about. Also, if you have a few extra seconds to spare,
which is technically only 3 beats at 60 BPM,
please subscribe to our show on your podcast app of choice and rate us 5 stars. You can leave a comment about absolutely anything, too. Go nuts. That small act of kindness will really help us expand our audience and continue to create new episodes.
And lastly, word of mouth is always super helpful. So if you like what you hear, please tell the world.
Okay, everyone. So this episode today is going to be an on-location episode.
Which I am not at, as usual.
Yeah, no, Jake didn't make it out. It's so sad. So sad, Jake. The invisible jet. It's like Superwoman. No, what is it? Wonder Woman?
Wonder Woman.
Wonder Woman had an invisible jet. What the heck am I doing?
That thing's awesome.
Right. We should have one of those. That'd be amazing. Anyway, so Jake wasn't at the shoot, and it was just me and Lydia, and I just wanted to have Jake again on the intro because, you know, he feels left out.
I do.
And, so we're going to bring you to it right now. Okay, great. I'm here today with Lydia Liebman, who is not only the daughter of some guy you may have heard of, Dave Liebman, who is on our site on My Music Masterclass, but also Karis Liebman, who is also on our site, two fantastic musicians. But she's got some amazing stuff going on in her own right, and she is the head of Lydia Liebman Promotions, which is a really cool PR firm for musicians, and she's got a lot to say. She also has a background in radio and a lot of other things, but I'm going to let her tell you so I don't mess it up, and so she can brag a little bit. How are you doing today?
I'm good. How are you?
We're good. You know, this is a strange time, so I'm not sure exactly when this is going to be released, probably in a few weeks from when we're recording it. But the plague is outside. You know, this is coronavirus. And we're going to pretend like that's not happening. And talk about things as if they, for when they get better. And we're believing that things will heal. And that's our hope. And anyway, let's talk normally.
Cool. Well, thank you, Adam, for having me on your program. It's funny. I told my parents I was doing this, and you know, this is a good, and just another step toward Liebman infiltration of the market. So this is great.
That's right.
It fits perfectly in the narrative. But no, thank you for having me. And, so I run this PR agency, called Lydia Liebman Promotions, mm-hmm. and it's mostly jazz. Well, it's all jazz plus, I like to say. And we've been around since, I mean, technically, I started in my dorm room when I was in college, so I like to say it started in 2010, but mm-hmm. probably really, like, legit started probably, you know, closer to 2011, so it's not that far off.
And you were in Massachusetts at the time, so it was mainly Berkeley students? Or?
Yeah, so I went to Emerson College mm-hmm. and Berkeley at the same time. I did this weird, like, joint program, mm-hmm. and I was doing primarily PR for shows, mm-hmm. like, you know, guerrilla marketing type of things for concerts, Berkeley students, stuff like that. Had a radio show, so I was able to tie in the, tie it all together. I mean, I didn't really know anything about what I was doing. Mm-hmm. Just kind of
sure.
learned on the job. But I started in Boston doing all this and have been in New York since 2014. Mm-hmm. So about, 6 years now. And, so far so good. When we don't have a plague going on, everything's good.
Exactly. Without the plague, without the Captain Trips virus.
Then we're good.
So your early experience, I know, did you do internships on the radio or was that a college project?
So I started out in radio. I started out in radio when I first got to college. When I was looking at schools to go to, Emerson had a really strong broadcasting and just general media stuff. It's a great school for media. Sure. I actually, though, was going to school for political communications, believe it or not. I started with that. Thank goodness. Right. Wised up and I'm not in that today. But yeah. I
it's a different scene.
Oh gosh. But I was gonna go for that, but I always wanted to keep doing music. Mm-hmm. Keep doing kind of get involved in media stuff and things like that. So when I got to Emerson, they have a really prominent radio station, WERS. Mm-hmm. They also have an internet radio station, WECB. And once I got there, I immediately was like, I'm going to have a jazz radio program. That was just, you know, the first thing I did was right. was go to the radio station and ask, you know, when auditions were. So I got involved in radio right away. I had the show. The show did really well. I had everybody on from over the years. I mean, we had everybody from Pat Metheny to Kurt Elling to right. Gregory Porter was like my first interview. And sure. it was all for me just being really excited about doing radio. I saw Gregory Porter performing at the Hilton in Midtown. This was right when his first album okay. had just come out.
Yeah.
And I was like, you're so good.
Yeah, he doesn't do that gig anymore.
Nope. And I was like, you're so good. I would love to have you on my radio show. Right. And he was like, oh, yeah, of course. You know, and then he got a Grammy nomination like the right. next week. So it was a... It was kind of a natural progression. I just like loved radio. Did mm-hmm. that. Did some internships. I did intern with Mark Ruffin, mm-hmm. Sirius Radio. I did internships at Ted Curlin's office.
Sure.
Booking. I pretty much tried the whole thing when I was in Boston. But what happened was I started having my friends on my radio show to promote gigs. And then I was like, well, what else are you doing to promote these gigs? Do you have a poster? Like, do you have a, you know, have you told all about jazz, what you're doing? I mean, I don't know. I didn't know anything.
I told my mom and my dad.
Yeah. They're like, and you know, I would go, there'd be like five people there. And
yeah, exactly.
Four related to them and one was their girlfriend, you know? So I said, okay, let me make you a poster, you know? Mm-hmm. So I like learned how to do Photoshop, you know, like just basically on the fly. I just got it cracked from some kid on my floor and
yeah, exactly.
learned how to use it and did some posters and did stuff like that. And then I was like, well, if we're making these posters, this was still in a time like social media was the thing, but not the thing.
Yeah.
So I was like, well, let me put them up. So I developed this route where I would go do 100 posters throughout Boston. I would start in the South End and then go up toward Berkeley and then go to Fenway and then go across to MIT and mm-hmm. then do Central and Harvard and all this stuff.
Sure.
So we did it that way first. And then I got to know this publicist, Anne Braithwaite, who I just love. And she's one of the, I mean, she's probably the OG PR person in jazz. She's just incredible. And right. she lives in Boston. Her husband's a professor at Emerson. And at the time, my dad was getting the NEA award, and he had hired her to do some work. And I had, this is the first time I had actually seen what a publicist does. And I thought it was really cool. You know, I didn't think about it at all as like a career. I just was like, oh, this is really cool what Anne's doing with dad. And it just kind of was in the back of my mind. So when I was doing these show promotions, I was like, you know what? Let me like write a press release. Let me, you know, try to send it to a couple people at the Boston Globe, see if they'll cover your jam
session.
Right, right. And of course, no idea what I was doing. But I learned how to do it along the way. And that was how it happened. So it started in radio and then just kind of progressed on to everything else. But it was all totally organic and it was really just from learning by doing. I did not go to school for this. I ended up going to school for producing film, television, radio. And then at Berkeley, I got like a professional music diploma. So right. It was all just, you know, learning by doing, really.
So what's different now with how promotion it works for musicians than when you first started at Berkeley with those guys?
Well, when I was in college, and this wasn't that long ago. I mean, we're talking like 2000. I graduated college in 2014. So,
still.
You know, and, but still so much has changed yeah. so dramatically and so
fast. Yeah, I mean,
fast.
Facebook was much bigger then.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Instagram yeah. was just like, was nothing.
Right.
You know, it, the landscape is changing rapidly. And there are still some things, I mean, there's a lot of things that still hold over and still hold true. I mean, you still need to have, at least in my opinion, you still need a well-written press release. You still need to have, you know, well-written materials for your album. And you still need to create, well, more than ever, you need to create visuals. So when I was starting...
And by visuals, you mean videos.
Like videos like that. Yeah. And all that stuff. So sure. So when I was starting, it was like, so 2011, 2012... I would say is when I really started because my first account was with Berklee College of Music. Mm-hmm. I was doing the Global Institute for Daniela Perez. And
right. That
was like, I didn't, you know, it was my first account. So I'm doing this like bare bones, like learning how to do it while I'm on the job. So, you know, for that, it was like very traditional. Write a press release, send it out, get it picked up. You know, if someone wants to come mm-hmm. do an interview, great. So in the mid 2000s, there was a lot going on in jazz and hip hop kind of coming together and all this stuff, and opportunities that weren't previously afforded to jazz musicians kind of became an option. So suddenly now, you know, you're getting track premieres, you're getting, you know, write-ups on blogs that at the time were really popular, like OK Player and The Fader and stuff like that. And they're mm-hmm. covering jazz-esque acts.
Right.
So this sort of transition happens, and while I'm just finishing college, and I am just like, you know, flipping out because this is actually great for us because right. it's my age that's reading this, it's my age that's digesting this media. So mm-hmm. that's something that was hot in the mid 2000s, getting a lot of premieres, you know, getting write ups from these non-traditional outlets and stuff like that. The premiere, like the importance of a premiere has kind of gone down now because blogs are not as popular as they were.
Right.
So now it's kind of like we're trying to find like what is the next best thing that we can get. Now, podcasting is a huge thing.
Right.
If we can get our clients on a podcast, you know, to really talk about their project and really go in depth with it, great. And of course, you know, the checkout from WBGO has done that. Jazz Night in America has been doing this. You know, there's been things over the years, but now there's really like a proliferation of these types of programs like what we're doing right now. And that's a really great opportunity because artists can go in deep about their projects and really talk about it. We didn't really have that when I was younger. We also didn't really have such an emphasis on video, like video, like right. real music videos and jazz. You know, if anything, you'd have someone, you know, doing a recording their session. And that was their music video.
Right.
Now, I mean, you're kind of getting some really creative shit. I mean, you're getting some artists that are doing like full blown, you know, music videos. I mean, I just had an artist. Totally. Yeah, like I'm working with Tana Alexa.
Sure. Yeah, she's got that going on.
She's incredible. You know, and I mean, by the time that this comes out, her video probably will be out. But mm-hmm. I was just at her shoot last week and it was incredible.
Yeah.
It was
full blown.
Super, you know, super legit. And that's the kind of thing that if it was going on 10 years ago, I obviously, I guess, didn't know because
I don't think it was.
You know? Yeah, I don't think it really was either.
Yeah. I mean, maybe on a very, very small scale.
Yeah. And if you're like a major artist who has money, you know, see.
Like Norah Jones.
Right. And the thing is now is like, now everyone's independent. I mean, 90% of my roster are independent artists or small boutique mm-hmm. labels. So with that, it allows a lot of artistic freedom that you couldn't have before, which is amazing. So the great thing about this is that you can do whatever you want and, you know, you don't necessarily have to be on Blue Note to have an amazing video. But then on the other hand, everybody can do it. So now there's like a complete oversaturation of music. But it has changed dramatically. Obviously, Spotify and Apple Music and all that and Tidal and all the streaming has taken the place of radio plays now in a way. So that's another part of it.
Mm-hmm.
But we're also still trying to figure that out. Because that's kind of the Wild West, and that's changing all the time about how you get onto a playlist, and you know, is there someone actually sitting there? Is it automated? Like, what's going on with that? You know, is the distributor going to pitch it? Are you going to pitch it? Who's pitching it?
Mm-hmm.
There's all these different facets, so we have to constantly be up to date on what's going on and constantly follow, you know, the music business news and follow the trends and currents and just be clued in on what's going on the ground because it's literally changing like that.
That's an interesting point, the playlist thing.
Yeah,
I mean. For instance, Amazon Music or Spotify, mm-hmm. they have playlists, right? Like they don't happen out of thin air. How is this being created? Is it magic?
You know, at some of these places, there's a guy or girl, there's someone who's there who's in charge of the jazz.
The jazz playlist thing.
You know, he's the jazz
station.
Right. He's the editorial director for jazz.
Or Pandora, right? Like the jazz station. I want to hear something that like Miles Davis.
Yeah.
Right? It's probably not AI, right? There's a person?
There's a person, but it's also kind of, you know, who are these people that are doing it? And I'm definitely not the person to, you know, I'm not as clued in on this because a lot of the time, the distributor is the one who's dealing with a lot of these playlists like that. So, you know, am I like actively pitching in the way that I'm pitching to like the Wall Street Journal, the cover client? Like, definitely not. The mm-hmm. distributor is really doing a lot of that. But I've had clients that have showed up on playlists out of nowhere, you know, editorial playlists, and he gets like, you know, millions of hits. And it's like an amazing gift, an incredible gift when this happens. It's also
totally random.
Yeah, in some ways. So it's really just kind of like finding that balance, you know, between making sure it's covering all the bases. As a publicist, like we're not just now pitching for interviews and trying to get reviews. I mean, we are doing a lot more than that. We're doing everything. I mean, I go to my clients' video shoots to see so that I know, you know, visually what am I dealing with and where can I get a placement for this? Or, you know, if there is someone who's doing like a single a week type of release thing, which some are doing that, you know, we're like talking to the distributor, like, so like, what's the plan to roll this out and how can we get this on playlist together?
Mm-hmm.
It's really quite intense actually.
Yeah, I can imagine. I mean, so something I do know about PR since I've hired publicists in the past is that you have to get your shit together before you get to a publicist.
Mm-hmm.
What would you suggest musicians have together before they contact someone like you?
Well, It's so funny because this answer changes a lot, but right now my answer is this. I have currently quite a few clients on my roster right now that are releasing in March and April that are definitely cross-genre. They are rooted in jazz, but they're crossover-esque, either toward indie rock or folk or whatever. And obviously, like, we will run into resistance from the jazz police for being, you know, not traditional enough or whatever. Okay, so then we have to try to get these artists on non-jazz outlets or non-traditional streams. Now, a lot of these places, these platforms that are doing, like, Paste, for example, or Relix, or even Tiny Desk, they're really looking at your social media numbers before anything.
Okay.
So something that is kind of a downer for a lot of my indie artists that are doing organic following, they're not out buying followers, they're not, you know, hiring a digital marketer, and they've got, you know, a respectable amount of follows on Facebook and Instagram. You know, maybe they've got somewhere between, you know, whatever, like 2,000 to maybe 4,000, 5,000 is high end. Unfortunately, like, those artists are already, most of the time, will not even be considered because their numbers are just not high enough. No matter how amazing the music is, no matter who's on the features, it doesn't matter. So this is a big problem. And lately, especially with the artists that we really need that crossover stuff, I'm falling into this issue where I'm like, you've got to get your numbers up because I can't pitch you to Paste if I don't have, you know, 10,000, 15,000.
Well, and they don't even, there's restrictions on Instagram. Like, you can't even put your web links in with that less than 10,000.
Totally.
Like, we had to get over, when we started with Instagram, we had to get over 10,000 to post links.
I mean, tell me about it. You know, this is the world we're in right now. And it sucks because it has nothing to do with music. And it's completely, you know, it's really just BS, really.
It's an episode of Black Mirror.
It is, totally. It totally is. It totally is. It's that episode with the, you know, with the girl.
That's terrifying.
It is. And it's, but it's the reality, you know. And I always, in the past, I've been a little, you know, of course, because I'm in jazz, so of course I'm going to be an asshole, you know. So, of course, I've always been a little dismissive of all this, like, oh, fuck that stuff. Like,
I know.
You know, this
but
is
you
got to
embrace a bit of it,
but
right?
But now I'm really saying to myself and saying to my clients, you've got to focus on your social media. And there's not, there's a certain amount that I can do, and it cuts off once we reach a certain point. Now, of course, there are exceptions. There certainly are exceptions. There are artists that are just, you know, are blowing up in one way or another, and maybe their numbers just haven't caught up. Maybe there's some that are super hot on Instagram and not so hot on Facebook, which is okay. You know, there's all these different conundrums that we have to deal with, but it's a big problem. So the numbers is the one thing that I really think people have got to start focusing on and not look down on it. You know, we're past it. Like, we're past being like, oh my God, this is, you know.
Yeah, I mean, you don't have to like it.
Yeah, you just have to accept that it's, if you're going to be a musician, you've got to be hip to the music business. And this is a huge part of it. So that's one big thing. The other part of it is really just having a finished and complete product that is professional looking. And what I mean is that sometimes I'll have indie artists that come to me and the music is amazing, but their packaging, like, they've done the CD already, or, you know, they've done all this stuff already before they get to me. And it is just like, you can't read it, or there's no track times, or, like, it's too artistic. You can't make out what it's saying. I mean, stuff like this, which sounds dumb because, like, who's getting CDs? Well, press people are getting CDs.
You're pretty much the only people
getting CDs. I mean, I send out, you know, we're in this room, like, if I opened up my closets, you would see the boxes. I mean, that's a box of CDs, that's a box. These things are all full of CDs. Like, I have CDs all over this freaking apartment.
There's no cooking in this house.
It's all the cabinets are filled with CDs. And it's the situation is just that, you know, we got to look, like, play to our audience. We're sending CDs to critics and journalists, many of which have been doing this for a long time. They got to be able to read the track listing. You know, I mean, let's get real. If someone's going to be putting this on the radio, the metadata has got to be filled in that it comes in, it doesn't come up track one, track two, track three.
That's another thing.
I mean, just is all, like, you know, stuff that gets lost in the cracks when you're doing stuff by yourself.
Oh, no. I mean, when I, well, I wrote music for television for a while, and I did a lot of licensing. And, like, step one back then was to have your phone number and email on both the CD and the jacket because they get separated. Step two was that if it doesn't come up in iTunes as your name and your contact info, or at least something about how to get in touch with you, you're finished.
Seriously.
It's worthless.
It's and it's, like, the worst because this happens sometimes. Like, there'll be times where I've sent out a mass shipment and the artist will be like, oh my God, I just realized, you know, the DDP wasn't sent it. This isn't the right version. And, you know, and I'm just like, okay, well, they're out there. So yeah. Now we just got to figure it out.
Yeah, exactly.
So I'm like constantly like doing damage control. It's right. Like half my job is like doing stuff, you yeah. know, doing it right, trying to do it right.
Right. But and then something fixing happens. Bonehead mistakes.
Totally. Yeah. So this is all stuff that, you know, you've just got to kind of like go through a checklist and just make yeah. sure that these things are in order. And if they're not done yet, you know, involving me or someone like me in the process so we can tell you, hey, mm-hmm. this is what we need to see on our like CD jacket.
Right.
You know, don't do a jewel case anymore because they break in the mail.
Right.
You know, I mean,
but that's important stuff.
Yeah. I mean, this is all stuff that is, you know, they're details, but mm-hmm. they're very important.
Do you guys still need one pages?
Yeah. I make a one sheet for every yeah. artist. I mean, they're sitting all over there yeah. like Keisha
Benjamin.
See,
that's
right
old
there.
School and it still works.
I mean, this one sheet, I mean, all my one sheets, I design one sheets for every record.
Yeah.
And they all look different.
Yeah.
They're all artistic. They all
but they all have a nice picture. They're formatted well. And they have the bullet points of what you
man,
need.
Man, they all, yeah. I mean, I take great pride in my one sheets because yeah. I try to make them look pretty as well as being informative. But we need a one sheet. You know,
yeah.
this is stuff that hasn't changed.
Right.
And I don't know when it will change because jazz is a little bit, you know, we're very resistant to change. So right. until the world gets on board with digital, this is how, well, when I say the world, until our world gets on board with digital, this is how it's going to be. So we are straddling the line, like, you know, sending CDs, hard copy one sheets, and also dealing with digital playlisting. It's like two different universes.
Right. And you do PDF one sheets, I'm assuming.
But
it's more rare, still a lot of hard copies?
Oh, I mean, I send a physical one sheet in the mail.
Glossy paper?
Literally sitting there. there's Lakeisha's right there, sitting there.
There
you know,
all it's, right, I'll check it out.
Yeah, it's like they all, like I print up 100 at FedEx and have to stuff them.
See, that's how you get your exercise.
Totally.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, all that stuffing, it's, you know. But it's, so we're basically doing both. We're doing the old school physical copy, mm-hmm. paper in the mail, go to the post office, and we're doing, you know, here's your interactive PDF, here's your Dropbox with your WAV files, and, you know, here is your digital world. But we're really doing both.
Right. I think it's good.
Gotta
because,
do it.
You know, especially because a lot of the people you're sending it to may be of different ages and prefer different methods of communication. It's very much like the same thing that I dealt with in the film world. I mean, you have some music supervisors that are in their 50s or 60s and some that are in their 20s and 30s. And some people prefer MP3s. Some people want this. Some people want WAV files on a hard disk. You know, so, I mean, you have to cater to the client. And
that's what we're doing. In the end, a publicist's job is to make your project the most available to the people that matter. Mm-hmm. So whatever that takes, if I have a writer call me up and they say, hey, I need a hard copy FedExed overnight to me. If that's what it takes to get that coverage, I will do it.
Yeah, for sure.
That's what it is. And if I have another writer that says, these aren't like in the right format MP3, can you send me, you know, some other, okay,
yeah,
fine.
Make it happen.
Yeah, I'll find a way to do it, you know? So it's really just about constantly being adaptive, and you just never want to say no to anyone for any reason. You don't want to say, I'm so sorry, I can't get you that, you know, those WAV files, so therefore you can't play it. I mean, that's just, to me, that's just like, there's no excuse for that. So you've got to constantly be on top of what's going on and, you know, in more ways than one.
So bring this back to composition and what I dealt with. As an agent, if you wanted to get an agent as a composer in Los Angeles, you needed to have a gig that was in the works. And it was always a funny catch-22. You know, the agents say, you know, we're not going to represent you unless you have a deal on the table. At the same time, you've done all the work to make that deal happen.
Right.
Now, I know with publicists it's different, but I know that there's a lot of work that has to be done beforehand, which we talked about, the numbers and things like that. But when is it best for a musician to look for a publicist, and what can they expect out of it? I guess that's what I'm asking. Is it realistically, like, not just, well, I have something, I want to be famous, can you make me famous? You know, mm-hmm. I know that's probably not as prevalent in the jazz world as the American Idol world, but still, there's probably some unrealistic expectations.
For sure. And the thing is this, there's really no textbook answer to when is it the right time to hire a publicist. Everyone is in different stages of their career, and some people will benefit from having a publicist early and some will not. It really just depends on all these extra factors, whether they're gigging, whether this is their first album, whether they have a label support, again, what their social media looks like. Is the music just so incredible that it must be publicized? I mean, yes, sometimes, you know, I mean, most music is pretty good that we work with.
Right. You'd hope, right?
Yeah. I mean, most of it's really, really good. Have I ever had a project come across where I was like, this is groundbreaking and I will represent this no matter what, even if he has no gigs, no one knows who he is. I mean, like, nothing's ever that good.
It's also kind of impossible.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, and the days of just being, well, this, wait till, you know, and of course, I mean, I'm sure you can imagine the emails I get, you know, wait till people hear this, people, it's going to blow people's minds. I'm like, well, yeah.
But so clickbait titles.
Yeah. And it's like, bro, so is everything else. So,
yeah. Yeah, exactly.
So it's kind of like, so everyone has kind of a different scenario. I will say this. I do tend to take on quite a few debut projects a year. Mm-hmm. There are some publicists that refuse to take on debuts because they're very hard, obviously.
Right.
Taking on a debut is difficult because you are responsible for setting the groundwork for them. It's their first formal introduction to the marketplace like this. And there's no bar set before, so you've got to set that foundation. So, mm-hmm. so there are some projects that do really well. Mm-hmm. Adi Meyerson, you know, bass player here in New York, mm-hmm. she did her debut and she did great. She got tons of coverage. She got features, she got reviews, interviews, the whole deal. Jonathan Barber, drummer here mm-hmm. in New York, another one. Now, they have in common that they are both very active and they're great side musicians as well, playing with a lot of different people.
Yeah, that helps.
That helps tremendously. Then we have other projects where, you know, they've got their one release gig and the music is great, but they're just not as visible.
Right.
So
they might have one gig a month or something.
Yeah. Yeah, right. You know, and then, and especially if I'm working with vocalists on their debut, I mean, for that is a whole other world where it's incredibly competitive and very difficult. Mm-hmm. So there are all these different factors that go into what makes a successful campaign for a debut. The way that I see it is this, like, we're trying to get your music heard. And as long as our job is to get it out there and to have people listen to it, we can't promise anything beyond that. Now, obviously, we have a track record of getting good coverage, but I can't guarantee that, you know, Downbeat's going to do a review. Right. I can guarantee they're going to get my email and I can pretty much guarantee they're going to listen to it. But is that going to translate into coverage? I mean, I don't know. I hope so. I can do my part to push it, but they either are going to cover it or not. So we try to just get it into as many hands as possible. So that being said, who is ready for a publicist? People who understand that that's what our jobs are.
Right.
You know, if people come to us and they're like, this is my debut, I want to get a, you know, help me get a review and Downbeat and all this stuff. I can help you do that, but mm-hmm. I cannot guarantee any of those things.
Right.
So I just want people that have realistic expectations. Mm-hmm. I have to turn down a lot. And not because, you know, I'm so great or anything like that. It's really just that there's a lot of people coming that looking for PR.
Yeah.
I can't possibly answer everyone in my email. I feel bad, but I just can't. There's just no way. If I spent my day answering everyone who inquired, I would have no time to pitch.
Right.
So, you know, to those people, I say, you know, there's just probably something that doesn't click to me as being the time for it.
Mm-hmm.
Whether I don't love the music, or maybe there's, you know, maybe the music is great, but stylistically it doesn't fit what I'm working at the time. Maybe, you know, social media and stuff comes in after. I mean, granted, it's important, but it's not the first thing I look at,
right.
You know. But there could be other reasons why I don't pick it up.
Maybe just a hard sell for you sometimes?
Sometimes, or? Yeah. I mean, yeah. Sometimes it's just, I don't know. It's just, the thing is, like, I just want to see something. If it's someone I'm not familiar with, mm-hmm. I want to see music that really is either, you know, different and create, there's something creative about it, whether it's the approach of the release. Like, there are some people, they want to release a single every week and then have an album come out at the end.
Yeah,
I mean,
I understand.
Which is sometimes can be cool, but it's like, okay, do you have, like, what are you doing to support that? Like, mm-hmm. what's your social media going to look like to push that? Do you have shows like every week or something that you're trying to promote the singles at? There's a lot of different factors. Then there's some people that really don't even need a publicist and they do a great job on their own.
Yeah.
I mean, I have some clients that hire me and I'm like, what do you need me for? Like, you're doing great on your own.
Some people are wizards.
Yeah.
I mean, I know some people that are just Instagram wizards. They have a Patreon.
Yeah, they have it all on lock.
And they're just crushing it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Grace Kelly is one of my clients.
Right.
I mean, Grace is a machine.
Yeah.
You know, what I'm doing for Grace is really just help. In the end, it's really helping to manage what she has coming as opposed to finding her. I mean, obviously we're always pitching and trying to find new opportunities, but
she's an easier sell.
Yeah. I mean, someone like that, she's doing a lot of the heavy lifting. Mm-hmm. So I don't have to go on my, you know, hands and knees and beg someone to please listen to this record. So it's just a lot of different things. And I would say that our roster ranges from people that are doing the debut projects to those that are like, you know, mm-hmm. like my dad. I mean, I work with my dad and I work with people like Wallace Roney and Brian Lynch and Ralph Peterson. And these guys have, you know, storied careers.
Sure.
And in those cases, it's sometimes reminding people what they've done. You know, maybe they have right. been out of the press for a minute. Maybe, you know, they haven't had a publicist for a while, and maybe people just aren't aware of what they're up to. I mean, Ralph Peterson released 4 albums in the past year.
I know, right?
Yeah. And so I was like, guys, this is what's happening with Ralph. Like, you guys know.
Yeah.
And, you know, he got a lot of coverage.
And he should.
As he deserves it.
All right. So do you give advice to your artists about social media in terms of how to post or what to post? Or, I'm, you know, like the, what is it, the 20-80 rule or the 30-70, the rules of how much business to post versus light things about your day? Like, do you ever talk to them?
I give my clients a ton of free advice all the time. I'm on the phone all the time. I think I really should just get a degree in psychology,
therapy,
so
yeah.
I can say that I'm a certified therapist. But yeah. But when it comes
to,
you
gig.
Know, yeah, it's the gig, and yeah. it's fine.
I mean,
I don't
deal with musicians.
I am dealing with so yeah. many personalities.
It's my gig too.
Yeah, of course. Like, you get it. It's a lot yeah. of different.
And
personalities.
My wife's a therapist, so it goes full circle.
See,
so she deals with me. I
you
deal
have
with
hooked
them.
That up, right? Yeah. See, I have got a.
I got the DSM.
I got it. Okay, well, we'll have to do some.
Yeah, we'll talk.
You know, it's funny though, but when it comes to stuff like social media and all of that, I mean, sure, I'll give them advice if they ask, but I actually really, at this point, I recommend them to hire someone to specifically do that with them.
Really?
It's a separate thing,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's actually quite separate from what we do. I mean, we're pitching to the media and to press,
mm-hmm.
you know, we're not doing a lot of direct to fan type of marketing. We're not doing a lot of front-facing type of stuff. We're
mm-hmm.
dealing kind of in an insular type of world, you know, pitching to journalists and stuff,
right.
and radio folks, and, you know, and that kind of thing. I mean, we take our social media seriously. I mean, I'm posting all the time. Anytime a review comes in for a client, we're posting it. We're active
mm-hmm.
on social media, on
right.
Facebook, Instagram, and all that, of course. But I think that clients should hire someone. You know, Jesse Markowitz does a great job at,
mm-hmm.
you know, doing social media for folks.
Sure.
There's other people out there that do that. And I think that
it's a full-time gig.
It's a full-time gig.
I swear.
It totally is a full-time
yeah,
gig. I mean,
our social media, it's brutal.
It's so much.
Yeah.
It's so much. And like, Facebook is like changing like all their stuff all the time. Like lately,
oh, yeah.
I don't know what's going on.
I don't
on.
Even see my friends' feeds anymore.
Oh my God. I don't even know what's happening. Like, I tried to post something the other day and you know, now
yeah.
like where the schedule posts have changed, they've gone to another page. And I'm just
yeah.
like, oh my God. Like,
yeah. why?
Why?
Why, Zuckerberg? Why?
yeah. Like, why do you hate me so much? It's like, stop.
yeah.
So it's, yeah. I kind of think that's a whole other thing. And I recommend people hire, you know,
yeah.
if you can get someone to do social media, get someone to do your PR, you'll be in a good place. And then once you've got that on the ground, you know, it's always people like, well, I really need a manager. I really need a booking agent. And it's like, there's no booking agent that's going to take anyone right now, unless you're already, as we said, booking your own gigs and already have a track record.
That's a tough one. Yeah. There's, I always tell people the same thing.
Yeah. I mean, there's just not. People ask me once a week at least.
Yeah.
Who do you recommend for booking agent? I really need one.
It's like you.
I'm like,
and then
yeah.
if you can hire someone better than yourself, great.
Yeah, like to help you do it.
Yeah,
but
then you also know what to look for.
Yeah.
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 Now you got to do it.
Yeah. And it's just like, man, I don't know who to tell you, because like, there's no one. You got to just do it on your own.
Yeah. Plus, you know how to you sell know? Yourself better than anyone.
Absolutely.
I mean, you should be able to.
I mean,
if
yeah.
you can't verbalize what you do, that's also a problem when
yeah.
you get to someone like you.
Yeah.
I mean, if you can't tell you.
Absolutely.
If I can't tell you, then that's not helping you.
Yeah, totally. Right. Yeah. So, you know.
The one sheet will be all messed up.
The one sheet will not look good.
No.
But yeah, that's the thing. It's you gotta hire someone to do that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
In the end.
Well, we could do this all day, but, you know, we have things to do. We are so busy. So incredibly busy. And thanks so much, Lydia, for sitting down
yeah.
with me and doing this. And I hope people enjoyed it. You know, there's a lot of great information and a cool, really cool perspective.
Yeah, I would say that in the end, you know, no one cares more about your work or your projects than yourself.
I would agree.
And you can hire a publicist, you can hire a booking agent, manager, whatever you want, but it really is up to the artist to be their own advocate in the end.
Mm-hmm.
And I will say, just the clients that I work with that have the most success are the ones that have the ones that are the most involved
mm-hmm.
by the artists themselves, where it's not like, here's my project, you know, go have fun, see you in 6 months
right.
and let me know how it goes.
Make my brand for me.
Yeah.
Right.
It's like, that is just not a realistic model. And maybe that was at one time, but it's just not anymore.
Right.
And especially now with everything being so, you know, independent artists can do everything. to be a successful musician in this world, you have to understand how the business works too. And you've got to familiarize yourself, you know, what makes a good press release, what makes a good pitch. You know, these are just things to know of. And I will say one other thing, that the story, something I neglected to mention earlier, which I should have, the story is like really the most important thing when it comes down to me taking on a project. Mm-hmm. And then sometimes that project getting coverage. Because just doing a standards record these days, I mean, you can sound amazing, but, you know, we don't need all the things you are anymore. You know, I mean, you know what I'm saying? Like, of course we do, but we don't need it. Like, this is not a necessity. No. So there's got to be more to the story than that. And I think that a lot of people who will even read the writing that I do, because we do all the writing in-house for all the press releases. Like 90% of the press releases are written here mm-hmm. by either me and my assistants and my associates, and we are the ones doing it. So, we're telling a really, like, I always try to tell a story in my press releases. They're mm-hmm. really heavy on content and heavy on the thematic elements of the projects, probably more so than most press releases I see. But that's because I feel like in order to send a story, we need to have more than just sounding great and blowing changes.
So like a little more emotional content? Or?
Yeah. You know, some of the best projects I've had have had really, really in-depth stories. I mean, we just did a press release for this amazing pianist, Carolina Calvace, and she mm-hmm. has a whole story. All her music is based on poetry, and you know, she wrote in original music to all of it. You know, Roxy Kaw is another one. You know, her project was a concept album.
Yeah, I was just talking to Roxy.
Yeah, like Roxy. You know, mm-hmm. With Women in Jazz organization, and all that. That's a whole thing. You got Brandy Younger.
Yeah,
you
know, Roxy's got a great story.
Yeah. And then the one that we're working right now, which is doing amazing, is Lakeisha Benjamin's project. Mm-hmm. She's got 40 people on there, Ron Carter, Reggie Workman, Didi Bridgewater.
Sure.
But she has a really, like, it's a really strong narrative. She's doing, her project is the music of Alice and John Coltrane. She divided into half Alice, half John.
That's cool.
It is cool. And she has people like Reggie who played with them.
Yeah, Reggie was there.
Yeah. Producing it. So there is like your concept, mm-hmm. you know, and the music is great, but the music, even if it wasn't great, it would still do well.
Yeah, that story's great.
It's a great story. Yeah. Now, not everyone's Lakeisha Benjamin. Not everyone can get Reggie Workman to produce a CD.
True.
But there's got to be something. So I also would just caution artists, you know, don't rush your first projects, or don't rush your projects in general. Mm-hmm. Don't do it just because, oh my God, it's been so long, I need to put something out, or oh my God, like I really need to put out a record. It's got to be, it's really got to be a whole package. Mm-hmm. And the last thing I'll say, like I sometimes have clients who release something with me, they did a great job, you know, and then they're like, hey, I just recorded, you know, 5 tunes, I did an EP, and it was a great blowing session. I want to put it out. What can we do about it? Mm. And I'm like, do you really want to hire me for this?
Yeah, I know.
Put this on Bandcamp.
Yeah.
And if you're doing all the things we just talked about, you know, and you're keeping on top mm-hmm. of your social media, and you know how to sell yourself because you've familiarized yourself with the process, mm-hmm. you should be able to do that yourself and push it yourself and save your money and don't hire me.
Yeah.
And then, you know, when you've got your next epic, hire me for that.
No, I know what you mean.
You know?
I just filmed for the site Miles Okazaki again.
Oh, yeah.
And he just put out this, I mean, it was a couple of years ago now, but he put out this entire works of Thelonious Monk on guitar, which is, again, and he said it did better than anything I've ever done.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, more press, New York Times, all these write-ups.
Oh, yeah, I remember.
Because it was a cool concept. I mean, he did it well.
Yeah.
You know, he did it great. He's a great guitarist. He did it very well. But I mean, again, it was just, it's cool, you know, and he did every song that Monk ever wrote.
That was an insane project.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's super insane. And like, kudos to him for being able to pull that off.
Yeah.
But like, there you go.
There you go.
You know? Yeah.
But it's worthy of taking a notice of.
My dad said to me, because my dad just released an album with Expansions, his project Earth. And, you know, he's joking because this is I've done some work for my dad before, of course, but this is one that I was like, you know, I told the record label and stuff. My dad said to them, like, Lydia is doing the PR for this. Like, let's just go all in on this. And I haven't actually done, this is the first project of my dad's that I've done PR for, like, with him as a leader, not him as a special guest or a co-leader.
Right.
And he was like, oh my God, I've gotten so much press. Like, how did you get, you did all this? How'd you get so much press? And I got a feature in Downbeat and all this stuff. And I was like, well, like, because
you know where I live.
Yeah, well, yeah. Yeah, because you pay for college. Yeah, exactly. But it's like, you know, because I was like, Dad, what's the story with this record? And we had a whole narrative for it. You know, I probably got more out of him on this thematically than he had ever intended when he recorded it.
No, but your father, I mean, I've you know, you've spoken to your father more than I have, but whenever I talk to your dad, he's very, very well spoken about exactly what he wants.
Oh, yeah.
And that's helpful.
Totally. Yeah. Totally. And I was like, okay, well, like, what's the concept here? Yeah. Why'd you record this? Like, we are going to. Yes. And I was like, we are going to tell the story. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so far it's working, you know? So wow. I was like, see, Dad, you know, I do something all day. I don't just sit around and.
Thanks for the college.
Yeah.
Record. Watching the Real Housewives all day.
I mean, when I do, though, it is Real Housewives of New Jersey.
Yeah, I'm with you.
R.I.P. Joe and Teresa's marriage. Well, anyway.
No, yeah, exactly. He got deported, yeah.
Spoiler alert to anyone who's tuned in and is not caught up.
What do you mean? I think that you'd have to be under a rock if you're a Bravo watcher.
I guess if you are in the world of Andy Cohen, you would know, which I very much am.
Of course.
When I'm not talking about John Coltrane.
Hey, man, I know all that
stuff. Got to be well-balanced, you know?
Yeah, I'm aware.
But
I'm first.
But, I mean, after this podcast, I'm sure some of your listeners might need a palate cleanser. So in that case, I do recommend the reunion episode.
Not Atlanta or New York?
You know, never got into Atlanta.
All right.
Love Jersey. It has declined in quality over its over its seasons.
All right.
But it's a good one. Oh, enjoy it.
Let me think. Wait, I was going to ask you one more question. Yeah. I know we already signed off, but I'm going to ask you one question.
Yeah, sure.
Headshots, pictures.
Yes.
How important? Because a lot of people don't have professional shots, so they need to have that before they come.
Need
to.
It. Yeah. Need it. Yeah. Having all your assets together includes having professional photos.
Right.
And I mean professional photos.
Yeah, with depth of field.
Don't give me selfies. Camera. Man, yeah. I've had people give me selfies. I'm like, yo, this is great for like something.
Yeah.
But I will say this. There are sometimes, especially in print, there are magazines that before they can commit to giving me coverage, they're like, what photos do you have?
Right.
Because they have to know they've got something to work with.
And they want something of high resolution.
Oh, God, yes. Yeah. I mean, at least, you know, 300 DPI, the whole deal.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It makes a big difference. I have like tons of photographers I can recommend. Sure. I have tons of people that I work with that do a great job. And also, it's important to like be creative, but not get too creative, because we also do need that standard, you know, not like a headshot like you're going on an audition. No. But, you know, we need to like clearly see your face.
Yeah.
I have some clients that are that understand this so well that they have, when I told them, I have one client that I'm working with that's getting a big feature in Downbeat in a summer edition, and he had photos taken, but they didn't have any photos with his instrument. So he went and got a photo shoot together with the piano and with the whole thing to have them for this one feature, which they may or may not even use.
Yeah, but it's good to have it.
Yeah. You know, and I was like, well, you might as well get it done now. Mm-hmm. So you have it, you know. So photos are super important. And if you're going to do videos, you know, we talked about it earlier, but if you're going to get videos done, please just, if you're going to go all in, just go all in. Mm-hmm. Do it right. Film it right. You know, get a team. You don't have to get a team, but get like at least a decent camera and do it. Do a decent job.
You mean if you're doing something from the album?
Yeah.
Right.
I got it. Everything's got to look high quality, because the thing is, these days is just everyone has the ability to do anything.
There's too much stuff.
There's too much stuff.
Yeah.
So the quality has to be super high. It's got to look really good.
Yeah.
And that goes for photos as well.
Yeah. And it's hard because people don't necessarily want to listen without seeing. I mean, they will with podcasts because they're often driving or mowing the lawn or doing whatever, or walking.
Yeah.
That's helpful. But you're right. You know, if it's on YouTube, no one wants to stare at an image of your album cover. Well,
totally.
That's actually pretty rough.
And more importantly, you know, because in the end, outlets don't want to feature that if it doesn't look good. If you're going to try to get a premiere, be part of a roundup, or, you know, the New York Times does the playlist every Friday where they include all genres. Mm-hmm. So if you're going to be on a playlist with SZA and Lady Gaga, you know, you're like that one or two jazz project that gets through. Mm-hmm. I mean,
yeah,
it's got to look good.
Like in a Thundercat way or something.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly.
That's kind of the dream of that style, or Snarky Puppy or something like that.
I mean, those are the
crossovers.
Those are the exceptions, you know. Yeah. Those are the ones that cross, or the Kamasis that cross over.
Yeah.
And I, you know, it doesn't always, and I know a lot of this probably sounds intimidating to independent musicians, because they're like, where am I going to get all this money to do this?
Right.
But, you know, I have to say, I mean, grants are an amazing thing. It's intimidating to apply for a grant, but one of the people I work with here, so my assistant, Dylan McCarthy, he is a grant writer when he's not working with me and doing other work. You know, I can't tell you how many people I've referred to him to help them with grants. Grants are our source. You know, you don't necessarily have to do a GoFundMe for every album, because eventually there's not going to be any money left for people to, like, you know, to live on. Everyone's doing a GoFundMe for their, you know, for everything now.
Oh yeah.
But, you know, there are ways to find people that do this type of thing. There's a place downtown, DCTV.
Okay.
They're based in Chinatown.
Right.
They are like a, it's like $25 a year to be a member.
Okay.
Yeah. And you can rent equipment and professional equipment, take classes, all this stuff. And it is amazing. I've used it for video shoots myself.
No way.
Yeah. DCTV. Hmm. I was $25 like 2 years ago when I got my membership first. So
it's nothing.
Nothing. And the equipment is super cheap to rent. Like, we're talking like extremely cheap, really generous, you know, return policies, all this stuff. So you just have to do the research.
Right. You can get it done.
Yeah. So it's not just like, oh my God, where am I going to come up with $30,000 to like get a video done? And we're going
to, yeah.
There are ways.
No, you don't need to do that.
No. And some people are like, others have told me there's no way I can do that. I can't afford it. And that could be true. I'm sure. I mean, no, everyone has different, it's not a, you know, the world out there is rough, but there are ways to do this. So you just have to investigate and find out and, you know, talk to your friends.
Yeah.
Make it happen, because
be an entrepreneur.
Yeah. Don't let it be a prohibiting factor, because there's always a way to make this stuff work.
On a side note, I just, my brother, he's a connoisseur of movies, and he told me, he said, you know, you got to check out Velocipastor. He said, this is a movie. It's about a pastor that turns into a dog. Right. It's one of those Sharknado type movies.
I mean, considering we're quarantined, probably it's starting tomorrow, I'll definitely be watching
it. It's a Sharknado type of movie, right?
Great.
So, and I watched it, you know, and it's basically a Sharknado type movie, you know, that vibe. And it's that level. But then as I was watching it, I said, you know, this movie, it's an hour and change, right? And it has professional camera, you know, whatever, you know, it's a real movie. It made it on Amazon Prime, all these things. I said, you know, this must have cost at least a few hundred thousand dollars. And they did it for $35,000. And, you know, you say what you want about Velocipastor, but when it comes down to it, someone made a movie for $35,000.
Yeah.
And it's on Amazon.
Yeah.
So there you go.
There you go.
That's called entrepreneurship.
And now I will be watching that. Because
I don't know.
Well, it will.
It's happening.
It's happening. Right. That sounds very intriguing.
It's worth it. Well, you have to get past the beginning, but
okay.
You know,
I middle and the end.
some of the other parts, yeah. But anyway, there's. I don't want to ruin it for you, but yeah, I think
the title
kind of gives it away. Anyway, on that note, I'll say thanks so much,
thanks,
and
Adam.
We'll see you next time.
Sounds good. Thank you.
All right, so we're back in the virtual studio with just Jake and I, and that was a really cool episode with Lydia. You know, I really liked what she was talking about in terms of what musicians need to get together before they see a publicist, because I feel like a lot of musicians just see a publicist or a PR person as someone who'll just bring their career to the next level without them doing any of the work. And it's never really the case, you know?
Yeah. The thing that stuck with me was photography. And like, I have a tip for that. You don't have to book some crazy like photo shoot when there's like, oh, you know, you need the fan. And just, you could literally invite a photographer to your apartment and have them take like lifestyle shots. That's it. Like, that's one big thing you can do. And those shots are usually great.
That's true.
Just something professional quality. If they have a full frame camera. So if you go to print, like, all that stuff's important. You need that stuff to be as high quality as you can.
Yeah. And you know, again, it's just really cool to get a perspective from someone doing PR, because it's something that a lot of musicians want. They want to be written up in articles. They want to get more press and all those things. But, you know, we as musicians need to understand how to make ourselves marketable so that these people can do their jobs and make it easy to cover our story. And so it's important to think of our music like a story, right? And our careers. And make it engaging so that it's easy to write about, because that's how we get noticed.
Yeah, the more work that you have already done, the more they can accomplish. So that's just rule of thumb.
I mean, yeah, they're not miracle workers. They can do a lot, and they have a lot of connections, but they can only work with what they have.
Exactly.
So anyway, that was great, and we'll see you next time.
See ya.
Questions, comments, episode ideas, hate mail. You can get in touch with us by contact form, email, or voicemail, all of which are available at our website, theperformerspathway.com. If one of your questions or topics makes it into the podcast, with your consent, of course, you'll receive a shiny new $10 gift card for use at mymusicmasterclass.com. That's our sister website, which contains over 600 original educational videos from your musical heroes. So we look forward to hearing from you.